Hi, this is my favourite Elliott Smith song. This podcast is all about trying to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive in our own very small way. And we do that by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hello, happy new year, and welcome to our very first episode of 2024. Our guest for this one is Shannon Lay. Shannon is a solo musician based in LA who's released 4 solo albums so far, as well as a collection of covers that came out last year. And on that covers album is a version of Angelis by Elliott Smith, of course, which you can hear at the very end of this episode. But before we get onto that, though, let's hear Shannon's interview with Elizabeth Withstanley. In it, Shannon talks about Figure 8, the importance of listening to albums from start to finish, and also the lyrical mastery of her favourite song pick too. So here's Shannon Lay.
I'm Shannon Lay, and the song that I've brought today is Can't Make a Sound.
I have become a silent movie. The hero killed the clown. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound.
I loved this song, not only like for the song that it was, but the place that it exists in his repertoire is like a really special space, I think. Like, it's the second, it's kind of the last song on Figure 8, an album that is just so unbelievably perfect from start to finish. And then it ends, you know, the album ends with this, like, you know, kind of cool down lap, which you need after listening to that album. You know what I mean? So Can't Make a Sound just feels like this like really cool representation of like contraction and expansion within kind of his like immense body of work.
So what do you take away from the song, or what do you, because there's like so many interpretations of like what he's saying, which
yeah.
I think is like maybe just something typical of his songs.
Yeah, of course.
So what is it that, what are you taking away from it?
You know, I think what it brought up for me was like duality, and this, there's a lot of talk about like, you know, sitting down, standing up, like the world within a world, like having these moments, the hero killed the clown, like this whole kind of back and forth of these archetypes, you know? And I think that that's something so interesting about the world, and is so necessary to like fully embrace in order to have an okay time here. Because otherwise you're always crying or you're always laughing and you're not experiencing kind of things as a whole. And I think that's kind of something I've been going through lately. I think that's why that's like what came up for me, was just this like idea of two, you know, joy and anger existing together, and kind of, you know, sadness and elation. Like there's just these like juxtapositions that seem to, like, I don't know, it's like opposite ends of the color wheel, but they look really good together. And it's like a really cool way to experience like the fullness of a moment.
The hero killed the clown. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound. No. Nobody knows what he's doing. Still hanging around. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound. Can't make a sound.
I love Figure 8 for its production. I think like the production is so thoughtful, and it's a record I come back to time and time again, and I always hear something new where I'm like, oh, that little thing, so intentional. Like, I wonder how much he kind of planned going into recording and how much he just improvised, because to me it feels so intentional. Every single thing is like, I want this here, I want this here. Like, he like orchestrated this like vision that he had, and he's using so many colors and so many different kinds of brushes and so many moods, and it feels like this real, like, I mean, it's like, I love, I'm on my 5th record at the moment, and this is his 5th record, and I think there is like the number 5 in tarot is historically this number of contraction. There's like this moment of just kind of like, but what comes after that is expansion. They're both necessary in order to grow. Like this kind of idea of growing is so beautiful, but it's also insanely painful and challenging. And I think you hear him knowing like this big truth, but also feeling attached to this like kind of more comfortable way of existing in the shadows, you know what I mean? But there's something that's like very, I hear a lot of joy in this record. Like I love the new Flatworms record did that for me, where like I listened to it and I was like, oh, they're having so much fun. Like I love that. And I feel like you can hear that in Figure Eight, where he's just really like expressing this, I don't know, purpose. The purpose feels really joyful.
The slow motion moves me. The monologue means nothing to me.
I mean, the poetry on that record is just unreal. And Can't Make a Sound is no exception. I mean, some of the lines in that song are just insane. Like, the world within a world, like, that. I'm glad he says it so many times, because it takes a minute to realize, like, oh, I'm the one who makes this world real. It wouldn't exist, from my perspective, if I wasn't looking at it. You know what I mean? Like, this whole idea that you're, like, the universe becoming aware of itself. And, like, it really wouldn't exist without your view being there to see it existing. Like, it feels big to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think he one thing he does in his songs a lot, and is also present in this one, is he's an observer, but he's also, you know, puts himself in the narrative, whether it's himself or someone else. He puts, you know, a person in the narrative. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that line that you're talking about, the last one, you know, the world within a world, I mean, that's very observational, right?
Totally.
And maybe much of the album is the same way, that he's sort of working through thoughts and feelings, observing and reflecting.
Mm.
It's an interesting song choice. Like, whenever anybody chooses a song, I'm like, oh, I hadn't thought about that song. Like,
there's so many, and they're all so good.
What about musically, that song?
Oh my God. First of all, that drop hits so good. Oh my God. When the drums first come in, like, that moment is just, it feels so triumphant. And I realized it also really echoes Stupidity Tries. I feel like Stupidity Tries has that same spacious bigness at the end of it that kind of only happens a few times on the record. I feel like it's very intentionally placed. And it feels like he's not afraid of it. It's like, I'm going to take my time and I'm going to add this little trumpet at the end. And you're going to be like, what? This little trumpet at the end? You know, like, it just feels really fun and playful and like as big as it wants to be.
Right.
It's awesome. I mean, the instrumentation on that record is just, it's unreal.
Yeah, I love Stupidity Tries.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of songs on Figure Eight.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I don't know, I feel like people overlook.
Yeah.
So it was nice that you picked this song.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of those records that once I start it, I have to finish it. Yeah. And if I pick one song from it, I have to go back to the beginning. I got to listen to the whole thing. It's like, you know, Pink Moon or something from Nick Drake, where it's just kind of like, okay, we're in. Like, we're doing this, you know? Yeah. It's perfect. It's a perfect run of, like, yeah, songs to me. It's stunning.
I would guess, maybe just from your age, you maybe didn't see Elliott Smith play live.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And did you stumble upon him after his death?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Totally. Yeah, I found him kind of when I was first moving to LA, and it was like a really, really nicely timed meeting to just get to know. I moved to Hollywood when I first moved here and like worked at a weed store and was just like figuring it out and like falling down. And there's no better soundtrack to that than Elliott Smith. That's perfect.
And at the time that you found his music, were you thinking, oh, this is a career for me?
No, I never really intentionally set out to do music. I ended up joining a band when I first moved here because I thought it'd be a great way to meet people. I literally went on Craigslist and was like, let me see if anyone's looking for a guitarist or something. And I found my first band and it just kind of like, you know, the thread kept pulling. And I think it's so important to pay attention to where you find that ease in your life, because that's, you know, that's not easy for everybody. And like that's probably somewhere that you're incredibly gifted and can kind of elaborate on, even if it's something that is a little bit left field where you're like, oh, I didn't realize I was going to do that. How'd I end up here? Yeah, it's cool.
And recently you released an album of covers. And the first song is an Elliott Smith cover.
Totally.
Can you talk about how that came to be or why you chose that Angelus? And
yeah, I was so... Elliott Smith's guitar playing is really intimidating to me. It's kind of like the epitome of just like, you hear it and you're like, I can't do that. I don't know, like I've ruled him out so many times just in terms of learning it on my own that like I had kind of given up on the idea of covering something, and then I came back to it as I was thinking about doing this album, and Angelus just fell into place in this really cool way. Like, that's my favorite thing when I try a cover and it just hits like right away. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, what a gift, you know? And so putting it on there was really cool. And the feedback that I've been getting from it is amazing, because it is an intimidating artist to try and portray and to put my kind of, you know, flavor on it was so fun. And it's been just like received with so much love. And one thing that happens is, you know, someone will come up and say, I've never gotten to see Elliott Smith live, and to hear an Elliott song live, I think is amazing. And I think it's one of the things that if you can say that you've seen him, I'm sure you can attest to like what a special experience that was. Like, I mean, even just the live footage I've seen of him, it's like, it's magic. It's magic in its like most distilled form. And that's just like the coolest thing. So it was nice. It was a cool challenge. And leading the album with it was, there was no question. I mean, he's been on like, I think he's been my number one Spotify artist for like 5 years or something. I like always come back to it.
Yeah. I would imagine, you know, going through that exercise of, you know, sort of making one's own version of a song, you then maybe end up connecting with it a different way than if you hadn't done that.
Yeah.
Did you feel that with it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely puts a little bit of like grit in my teeth when I sing it. Like there's something really like, there's something bitter about that song. And I think that it's really talking about what we all know to be true, and yet what we all play into kind of all the time, where it's like we have to sell our souls. Like we have to sell our, like creativity is, you know, who we are. It's like the squishiest part of us. And yet we kind of put this like barcode on it and we're like, all right, who wants it? Who wants to come and get it? You know? And I feel like that's kind of what that song is summing up in a certain way. But then at the end, I think it's a reminder that like, you know, the people that matter aren't going to treat you that way. And like, there's just certain aspects of this that are uglier than others. And so it's nice, you know, being up at a show and talking about how there's money to be made and, you know, knowing that that's a real like reality of what we're doing. It's just like an inevitable outcome of production, which is like what creativity becomes in order to support you. And I don't know, the importance of knowing that, and then also, I guess, keeping your joy around why you're actually doing it and like doing it for you and not trying to like, I don't know, put yourself into the box somebody's saying would be more profitable. You know, I don't know. It's always tempting to be like, what do people want? It's like, no, what do you want to do? Because that's what Figure Eight sounded like to me. It was like, this is what he wanted to do. This wasn't the record label telling him to do something. This was just like, I have a purpose. Hear me roar kind of thing. But it's a big thing to talk about, you know, and I've been talking to more and more musicians about it. And it's been amazing to just open up about this thing that feels almost like secretive, you know, and these days you have to be so many things besides a musician in order to make something happen in art in general. Like you really have to take on all these roles that are really recently defined and all of a sudden seem like the most important thing. And a lot of it doesn't feel real, you know? I guess I'm thinking of like online presence specifically and digital streaming even. It can feel so flash in the pan when that's just like, that's a piece of your heart, you know? Yeah. Like it's a really weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even performing too, like there's, you know, I feel like some musicians feel pressure for like, what is this performance I'm going out there to give people, which I feel like it was a struggle with him too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he, you know, obviously really liked music and really liked to sing and play, but that aspect of, you know, I'm here in the spotlight and you're all looking at me, which you can feel in a lot of those songs, I'm sure is challenging.
Totally. Yeah. It's super trippy. And there's a lot of like chemicals involved. I mean, just like the amount of stress that goes into putting yourself into this position that, you know, your body is kind of interpreting as like life or death. Even if it is like a lighthearted living room show, like you still get that pit in your stomach of just like, this matters to me and I don't want to fuck it up. You know, like there's always going to be that.
And I feel like, you know, I mean, one can interpret Can't Make a Sound many ways. But I do feel a little bit of the performance aspect in it too. Like, you know, being up in front of everybody and, you know, that reference to what do you do with that?
Right. Yeah.
You know, do you hear what I'm saying? Like I'm expressing these, you know, thoughts and emotions to you, but are you just...
Are you glazing over or is it hitting? Yeah, absolutely. I think in LA too, a lot of people can, you know, I've been talking to a few people that have said it shows, you know, there was this really nice moment after the pandemic had like kind of live music was coming back that I think people felt the golden nugget of like loving everything that a show is. And then all of a sudden it fell back into like, oh, I'm seeing 5 shows a week and like, it doesn't really matter. And I'll probably leave before the band I came to see finished, you know, like it's really, really saturated here. And yeah, it becomes, I guess, mundane when it really is magic. You know, I think people need to like remember what and why music exists. Like I don't think there's ever been a time without music. It's like something we have to do.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice.
Music is great.
Yeah, music rules.
Born in the role, but he can't stop. Standing up to sit back down. You lose the one thing found.
And then also just going back to one thing that you mentioned that there was many aspects throughout Figure Eight where there seemed to be these specific details that, you know, you've been questioning how intentional were those and so forth, which they do feel very intentional. Like it's, you know, it's not a great, you know, commercial release album, you know, in its length, the number of songs, and, you know, it does seem very labored over. How, as a musician and as you progress in making your albums, is that something that you think about?
Of course. Oh my God, the expansion. I'm in one at the moment because I feel called to do it. And I also see how like kind of vertical that mountain is. Like it really does require you to get over a lot more than just like, I don't know, the surface stuff. Like there's always something deeper beneath the resistance to that expansion that like naturally has to come up in order to like triumph. So I'm kind of in the contraction phase of just like being like, oh, this is challenging. I don't know if I want to do this, you know, and I think eventually it's like breathing. I think I was thinking of breathing when I was listening to the song on the way here and how like you breathe in and you breathe out. And as you breathe out, there's not this fear that you're not going to breathe in again. You know, it happens really naturally. And so I think we have to remember that about our own progressions is that like, if you just keep going, you know, the slow motion moves me, like that line of just like, there really is just, there's like, you just have to show up. And you just have to keep going. And, you know, I think that the purpose reveals itself just in the natural movement of things. There's not always going to be an aha moment. It's just maybe like a certain amount of steps that you have to go through in order to like be where you feel like you should be now. Like if you're not where you want to be, there's medicine in right now that you need to get that like will probably help you when you do get to that moment. So yeah, it's interesting.
Did you, because your covers album is the most recent release that you have. So did you get to a point where you thought, this is the right thing for me to do? Like, I really want to, you know, explore these different bands and these musicians that, you know, I enjoy and experience the songs in a different way by releasing them yourself. Was that, how was that progression for you?
Yeah, the last full-length record of mine that I put out, Geist, it took me a long time to digest it. You know, like, I feel like I had never done that with a record. I always kind of finish something, and before I pat myself on the back, I'm like, well, what are you doing next? Like, you know, you kind of have that urgency behind it. And with Geist, I really felt the need to, like, internalize what I had just happened. Like, let the songs also, like, teach me after the fact, because I think that happens a lot, where, like, I'm speaking kind of from this, like, higher self perspective, and then eventually I'm like, oh, that's what I was saying. You know, like, there's that cool kind of time travel that occurs within a record. And when 2 years had passed, I kind of had that like, oh shit, I gotta do something moment. And the covers thing came about because some friends of mine, Carly and Rob, they reopened this absolutely beautiful studio in Alhambra called Altamira Studio. It's an amazing, amazing place. Highly recommend. And he had me over and I saw the studio and I was like, I just wanted to make something. You know, like kind of this, I love when like the environment kind of dictates what's about to happen. And so we went in there and we just recorded in this absolutely beautiful space. And I had like enough covers amassed that it just like was very easy to do and really fun. And now that I've, you know, that some time has passed since that, there's this pressure building of, oh shit, I have to do something. I have to produce. I have to have something to show. But at the same time, I'm kind of trying to put less pressure on the situation because it's not fun at all. So I'm realizing that some things take time, you know, like this record Figure Eight was released 2 years after his one before. And then after that came out in 2004, which was 4 years later. So I think there's always going to be these periods of just kind of like digestion and reflection. And then, you know, who knows what wants to happen? Like I started doing ceramics last year and I do like a bunch of ceramics. Like I love doing that. So it's like, I'm always doing something creative, but I feel like keeping your musical identity alive can feel like this, like you're drowning and you just like constantly have to like find new things to hang on to so that you don't disappear under the surface of what, like I've heard Spotify has like 800,000 songs a week that get posted. You know, like it's insane how saturated it is. But I've also been loving the concept that like, I don't know, you don't make things for everybody, and like the people who are with you are going to stay with you. It's not like anything that's meant for you is ever going to pass you by, so forcing it just feels like a crappy way of enjoying the present moment, you know. It's
but it's funny the things that rise to the top and the things that don't. Like I mean, Elliott Smith, I feel was fortunate that you know, his music got momentum and, mm-hmm. you know, it was really out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did get lots of recognition while he was alive and, you know, maybe didn't necessarily want to be that star that he was, but, you know, but it happened. But then you look at people like Nick Drake, the second cover song on your covers, and, you know, nobody knew who he was at the time.
He's a musician's musician, yeah.
Yeah, you know, people like the music now and listen to it now, but for some reason at that time, you know, he was overlooked. And I imagine it's challenging to sort of look at the world that way. It's like you look at like, oh, there's this craziness around like Taylor Swift. Like, I don't understand why all these people are going to these Taylor Swift concerts, you know, like, why do so many people like this?
She's a witch.
And then, you know, and then I listen to Nick Drake. I'm like, why didn't people like him? Like, that he sounds like he should, you know, be playing stadiums to me. Like,
100%. Yeah.
So I'm not sure where I'm going with this question, but, you know, Elliott Smith did get both sides of that. I mean, he did start off small and he did get to play in the stadiums and be somebody really big. And I think he was really challenged by that.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something nice in what you're saying in that, you know, you're okay with, you know, some people will like you and they'll stick with you. And, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily need to be Taylor Swift.
Right. Yeah. There's all kinds of success, you yeah. know? And like the model doesn't work for everybody. Like, for instance, in a big sense in the music scene, I think like the label model is not working for everybody. And you know, I was talking to someone the other day who, you know, got into music back in like the 70s. And he was saying back then it was like, you know, you get a label deal and you get a bunch of money and then you can tour. And now it's like you have to tour to make a bunch of money and you better release that album yourself or else you're not going to see a dime. Like, you know, it's kind of the whole thing is flipped. And it's just like you're constantly having to rewrite something that didn't have rules to begin with. So it's just like, it's an interesting facet. And I think finding your place within things, and even like with the things we're pressured to do, like social media, like finding the way that feels good for you to do. It's like, it's so important to just check in with what feels authentic. Because if you're just like posting to post or making a song so that like people don't forget you, then like chances are it's not going to hit the way that you mean it to. Yeah. It's just you guessing and like... it shows, yeah. You know, like, I don't know, you don't have to be certain, but I think that there's definitely like an aspect of like, are you enjoying what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't do like, quote unquote, well in music, in your opinion, like, are you enjoying yourself? Like, cause that could be, that means you're doing well, I don't know. Like, there's all kinds of like ways to look at it, I guess.
Yeah,
but definitely. If you're trying to be Taylor Swift, I'm guessing that you're going to be constantly disappointed, you know, like, It's kind of, she's an enigma. Yeah, she figured it out, man. Spinning the world like a toy tom, till there's a ghost in every town. Can't make a sound, can't make a sound, can't make a sound. Eyes locked and shining. Can't you tell me what's happening?
So maybe going back to Can't Make a Sound. you know, he there's a line in there where he says, bored in the role, but he can't stop.
Mm.
Which, you know, maybe there's some aspects to being that sort of producer of music or entertainment that maybe he's bored in that role. Mm. But he himself, because of that love of music, like he can't stop, you know, from making it. And that's some of the things that we're just kind of touching upon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about your thoughts in this direction.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I think he came up in a time where music was being manufactured and TV was being manufactured. And it wasn't so much anymore like, what do you have to offer? It's like, oh, you got a sparkle, kid. We're going to put you in these clothes and we're going to give you these lyrics and you're going to sing them. You know, it's kind of it, like, I remember like the Spice Girls coming out. I remember Backstreet Boys coming out. And like, it hit me at the perfect age where I was just like, yes, I believe you. Like, it's science music. You know, it's like music that is meant to just like massage your brain and like make you feel so many like dopamines and all the things. And I'm imagining that at some point the label was just like, what do you think about pop music? You know, like, I think that they probably wanted to shape him into what he could be with their help. And that doesn't necessarily make for the most comfortable environment if it's not what you want to be, you know? Like, I don't know. There's something about creativity that's so wild and organic, and you can, you know, pick that flower and keep it alive in like a pristine environment, but it's also just like a little bit, I don't know, it's not for everybody. And he was so wild. He was like, his growth was unstoppable. And there was just something about his potential that I think was probably intimidating even to him, you know? And it was someone you couldn't keep small, even if you wanted to. Like, it just, it was going to be what it was going to be. And even years later, I think the impact of his music, like, it continues to, in, like, capture people, because it's like, it's that special, yeah. You know? It's the reason we have museums. Like, this shit is really fun to look at. Yeah. And it's fun to be inspired by. And it's fun to, like, pick apart, like we're doing. And just, like, I mean, it sparks these conversations that are so relevant to today. And, like, yeah. You know, I found it interesting. I always like to, especially when an artist has such a vast collection of work, like I listened to the end of the album before. I listened to the end of Exile, which is, I mean, the song is literally called I Don't Understand, or Didn't Understand. and you know, it's a little bit anticlimactic. There's something anticlimactic about that. But it's also very honest, which I appreciate. And then on Figure Eight, he busts onto the scene so hard. He literally says, like, I'm taking off the bars, like I'm busting out kind of thing. But he still doesn't know what he's doing. But there's like this energy of like, I can't hold back this purpose, this like greatness that dwells within anymore. And for it to end on the, you know, the kind of walkabout song from A Basement on the Hill, Coast to Coast starts with, I feel like, the end of that song. Like it starts with By and then kind of busts into this like what feels like a B-side. A Figure Eight a little bit. You're like, oh, this fits in this world. And then he's like, no, but remember who I am. Let's get lost. Yeah. It's just me and this guitar, baby. Like, you like all this production? Like, that's cool. But I am so... It's me that's the magic. Yeah. None of this other bells and whistles. Like, when you get down to, like, the little black dress, this is still the best thing that you're going to want. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think I feel, like, as someone who... not to like toot my horn, but I think I have that ability to play with just a guitar and capture people's attention. And there's a certain part of me that feels very like protective of that. And like, that's part of my fear of expanding is kind of letting people like, I don't want people to forget that that's like what I am at my like core is like, it's that like complex simplicity that is just so, and like, it's really interesting and magical. And yeah. So I mean, I love that he came back from A Basement on the Hill, and so much of that record is just like kind of him back within himself, mm-hmm. just like ripping an acoustic guitar. Yeah. It's so cool. And I think I encourage other people to do that too, because I mean, myself, I love thinking about the end of a record and being like, you know, I want that last song to be where it's going next. And sometimes I don't even know where that's going to be, but I look back at what I've done and I'm like, oh yeah, there is this kind of like, there's like a path forming here, yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's, I encourage people to,
yeah.
Especially with artists you love. It's like,
yeah.
It's so fun.
And I think one thing that's nice too. And you know, from some of the things you're saying, like, we sort of, in these times, I feel like people lose sight of the album because there's things like Spotify and all these playlists are coming. So songs are being like, you know, extracted from albums and you don't get that flow. And it seems like, you know, one thing that you're really saying is you're really enjoying that sort of narrative flow that he sets up both musically and, you know, maybe thematically.
Totally. Yeah. Love that. I think albums are important, you know. I think it is this culture of consumption at the moment, and like, I don't know, albums are meant to just be like cherished, not like chewed up and spit out. It's something you spend time with, and I think stillness is really difficult for people, and especially since we're kind of coming out of this moment of the most still that the world has been in recent memory, like we're all really getting our wiggles out, and I hope that we can remember how important that time was. And like finding that time to just like sit with a record and drink a cup of tea, or, you know, really like let the artist speak to us. Like it's our version of a novel, you know. It's like we're offering you something that's a little more to chew on, but I'm gonna guess that you're gonna enjoy it, you know. Yeah. I love it.
Thank you very much to Shannon for joining us on My Favourite Elliott Smith Song. I thought that was a nice way to end the interview as well, as it's definitely one of my New Year's resolutions to listen to more albums the whole way through. And that's pretty much it for this week's episode. As always, though, you can connect with us on social media. We're at My Fave E Smith Song, and please do rate and review the show on your podcast app of choice too. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with a new episode in 2 weeks' time. To play us out, here's Shannon Lay with Angelus. You can find this track on her album Covers Volume 1. See you soon.
Someone's always coming round here, trailing some new kill. Says I seen your picture on a $100 bill. What's a game of chance to you? To him it's one of real skill. So glad to picking up the ticket shows there's money to be made. Go on, lose the gamble, that's the history of the trade. Did you add up all the cards left to play to zero and sign up? Don't start me trying yet. Cause I'm all over it, Angelus. I could make you satisfied in everything. Secret wishes could right now be coming true and be forever with my poison arms around you. No one's gonna fool around with us. No one's gonna fool around with us. So glad to Angelus.
My Favorite Elliot Smith Song is produced by Rob Comber and Elizabeth Wood Stanley. You can find out more about the show at myfavoriteelliotsmithsong.com.